The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
On 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by Absa Access, an award-winning, secure, single sign-on platform that lets you manage your finances with speed and intelligence. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Well, out of the UK in the last couple of minutes have come lots of breaking stories around the lifting of red list restrictions in a whole bunch of countries. And 8 countries have been removed from the UK's red list. Unfortunately, South Africa is still on the red list. We are still hugely constrained from travelling to the UK. They've lifted restrictions, red list restrictions on Turkey, Pakistan, Maldives, Egypt, Sri Lanka, Oman, Bangladesh and Kenya, all removed from 4 o'clock on the 22nd of September. So that means no quarantine on the return to the UK if people are double jabbed. And so that is interesting. They've not added any countries to the red list, but I see that Lisa McLeod, who's a senior media figure in the UK, she spent some time in South Africa. South Africa's still on the red list. She hopes that the UK government gets the tourism industry is now in a critical condition and transnational families knocking on for 2 years no travel or a £5,000 family bill in quarantine. They're taking the mickey, frankly, on those quarantine stays and all of that sort of stuff. There does seem to be huge iniquity around it. We wait to see whether or not they will lift those red list restrictions in time for a summer holiday. But people are making their summer holiday decisions now. Well, they've been making them for months, I suppose. And South Africa will miss out on yet another bumper tourist season. We need to make better plans, better communication with the UK. This is The Money Show. I'm Bruce Whitfield. We'll talk to Peter Attard-Montalto in a moment, all about what is happening in relation to a study that they have done on behalf of Business Leadership South Africa and Business Unity South Africa on the Basic Income Grant. We'll catch up on the very latest from the world of rewards programs. And then in the Biz Quiz this evening, an exclusive. It's the first time that the Biz Quiz has ever broken news, but an exclusive tonight, and it is a clue. And I just suddenly recalled watching Jacob Zuma in the Constitutional Court rescission application today, and yet another loss for the Jay-Z team. And I began to wonder why it is that Jacob Zuma keeps his legal team on board, because they keep losing. It's like having the same football coach in for 3 seasons and you're just not making any progress. Why would you keep the same team? I'll take you back to an interview I did 4 years ago with a member of that legal team, and the clue is there for all to hear. That revelation coming up later on The Money Show.
702.
Bruce is on The Money Show.
Lots of debate around whether South Africa should have a basic income grant. I think there's a very strong argument that we should. The big question really is whether we should be able to afford it or not. Peter Attard-Montalto is the head of capital markets research at Intellidex, on the line to us from the United Kingdom this evening. Peter Attard-Montalto, give us your perspective, please, because you've done this research on behalf of Business Leadership South Africa and Business Unity South Africa. They've asked you to look into it on a headline level. What's the big finding?
Good evening, Bruce. Well, clearly evidence that if you transfer a very large amount of money to the poorest in society, it will improve their material well-being. The problem is starting to think about how you pay for it, the implications of how you pay for it, and the viability of some of the plans that have been put out there to think about raising taxes in particular. And that's really the meat of the report, is looking into a lot of the potential tax hikes that could come through. And basically we find sort of deep worries around the sustainability of introducing very large multi-layered tax hikes across, say, wealth tax, say, a social security tax, changes to things like pension savings incentives as well. That really cast doubt, I think, over the fact that you would be able to raise enough money to sustainably fund a basic income grant of the sort of conceptions that have been put out there without quite serious implications on savings rates, on the macro economy, on growth, on employment creation, etc.
I mean, we've got this idea of, it's a very populist idea, of course, this idea of a basic income grant. It would be very attractive. Lots of people would like it. Certainly, it's a vote winner. If you're somebody who doesn't have an income and has got no prospect of a job, and let's face it, 15 to 34-year-olds, 75% can't find a job. On average, 44% of working age people can't find a job. The idea of a basic income grant is an enormously attractive political proposition, but it's a political proposition. This is not a mathematical proposition. The math tells us it's just not viable in the structure of our economy as it is at the moment.
So this is the debate that we want to be part of, to say you could do all these tax hikes, right? But these are the implications of doing that on savings rates, on investments, on the type of capital that is needed to fund the infrastructure investments that are needed to sort out, you know, transport data problems that are part of actually the wider social wage, if you like, of the poorest in society. And I think this is the conception we need to think of, is thinking about income in a very narrow sense. There's only one single axis of inequality in South Africa. And to address this the broader range of inequality, including geospatial, including access to assets, access to credit, all these sorts of things, requires a much more sort of holistic view, and which many of these tax hikes and many of these funding options would have a very severe impact. So you could, for instance, entirely debt fund a basic income grant, but that would have very, very severe impacts on the sovereign yield curve and on the ability for banks to lend, the incentives for banks to lend into the private economy.
Well, certainly the new finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, doesn't want a basic income grant. He's very clear that the fiscus simply cannot afford it. He's very happy for alternatives to be explored. But this idea of a basic income grant, which is put forward by the African National Congress's National Executive Committee, is, as far as he is concerned, unworkable.
Well, indeed. I think the problem is that the scale of inequality and of unemployment in South Africa is so big that, you know, any one individual type of policy solution is not really going to fully address it. What is really needed is very long periods of sustained labor-intensive growth, ultimately, to create a sustainable way of lifting people out of poverty. But, I think the alternatives that the National Treasury are favouring are the ETI, this employment tax incentive, which has shown some success, but also combined with, you know, large employment schemes like the Presidential Employment Stimulus, which has not really fully reached its capacity yet. It's been curtailed in funding, but there's discussions going on to broaden funding there for about $13 billion to $33 billion per year, and will give a lot of job opportunities to people. And so there are alternatives on the table, but there are also alternative grants. There are discussions now going on around some means-tested benefits, which would be like a basic income grant, but much more targeted and would be a lot cheaper than many of the conceptions of a basic income grant. So I think this needs to be a much richer debate. There's not just one idea on the table.
I get a sense that you've created an acronym for basic income grant. I don't know if you've created it, but it's the first time I've seen it. And the acronym for basic income grant is BIG, basic income grant. And it gives us a feel for it. Maybe, you know, it's just too big for us to swallow right now.
No, I certainly haven't come up with that. I think that's a very well accepted acronym for a basic income grant. But this is a very live discussion. This is an important debate for South Africa to have. And I think the purpose of our report is not to say no per se, right? It's to say, here are the implications of doing this. And I think, remember, there are a lot of other policies that tax hikes and various forms of tax change are notionally tagged to already, such as NHI, where there's been discussions in the past around, say, a VAT hike to pay for that or some form of employer contributions for wider social security changes. There has to be tax changes as well, and there's a lot of other reasons to be changing the tax code apart from simply paying for this very, very large basic income grant.
My thanks to Peter Adod-Montalto, the head of capital markets research at Intellidex.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
And on to loyalty programs this evening. Three quarters of us apparently are using loyalty programs, according to the sixth edition of the Truth and Brand Map Loyalty White Paper 2021. Behind that loyalty white paper is Amanda Cromart. She is the chief executive at Truth. Is this 74% uptake of loyalty programs amongst us, Amanda Cromart? Is it the highest number ever?
Hi, Bruce. No, it's actually not the highest ever. It's higher than our last report, which was in 2019, which was 72%. But the highest number ever was in 2017 at 79%.
Okay. So, I mean, and that doesn't really then correlate with my thought on this huge uptick that we've seen in loyalty programs, because I would have wondered whether or not they are an economic indicator that we use loyalty programs in tough times more than we do in good times.
I think there's no doubt that they've been on the increase since they came down from 2017. In 2018, they were 75%, so they're, and then down to 72 and now up to 74%. So there's no question, if we look at which brands have improved their use numbers in the loyalty program space, that our consumers in South Africa are using them in tough times to get through their monthly payments. So yeah, there's no question. It's very dominated by retail. All the retail brands, particularly grocery retail brands, are up significantly in terms of the usage of programs. And then the other non-retail sort of leaders in loyalty are more or less plus or minus the same versus the last time we looked at it. So it's definitely an indicator. And if you look at what people are using loyalty programs for, it's for cash. We need cash and we need discount vouchers. And that's what they're voting for through the Brand Map survey.
How has that changed then? I mean, loyalty used to be a fun thing. Loyalty used to be a little reward, a little treat, a little smoothie, or, you know, maybe a little bit of cash back if you clicks, or a little bit of, you know, a bit of a benefit. You might get a free flight on an airline once called SAA. It used to be a bit of fun. But now it feels like loyalty has really turned into a survival game for many people.
Bruce, what would be an interview with you without a dig at SAA from you? Yeah, so you're right. The love of, if interestingly, the travel benefits have not necessarily plummeted down the scale of what users want, but definitely cash is becoming more and more dominant year on year. We interviewed prior to releasing these results in a clandestine way. She didn't know that Pick and Pay had come out tops, and we'll get into that in a moment. But we interviewed the head of Smart Shopper, or head of loyalty and strategic partnerships at Pick and Pay, Melissa Hanley. And she very much talked about the reason Smart Shopper, in their opinion, is doing better. And now these results have actually backed that up for them, is that they've introduced something called Smart Prices, which basically is the very best price available in Pick and Pay, but you can only get it if you're a Smart Shopper. So you're using the program to access the very best deals. So yeah, I think some of those treats are still there, and the programs that still are able to offer that in a surprise and delight manner and so forth, it's great to see. But I think the hardcore benefit of cash back, or the very best price, or vouchers that come to you, from these grocery retailers, but also the financial services firms have done super well in showing that their offer that they give to the market is really appreciated by their members. The Brand Map survey asks a question to say, if you can only keep one loyalty program, which one would it be? And the top seven spots in that response are financial services, retail banks or insurance firms, and eBucks again is the most loved, effectively, loyalty program that South Africans can't live without.
It's really interesting. I mean, the fact that Pick and Pay comes out tops is amazing. ShopRite's loyalty program, the Checkers loyalty program, has certainly created a lot more social media hype and noise, and maybe because it's newer than the Pick and Pay program, and maybe that's why it's got a bit more public attention. But it's interesting that consumers prefer the Pick and Pay program. I still can't understand this concept of going to fill up at a petrol station, being asked if I've got a Clicks card, if I go to one particular petrol station, or a Dis-Chem card if I go to another petrol station. That tie-up still befuddles me.
Yeah, I'll come back to your last point there about fuel, but just on the sort of grocery battleground in loyalty, whether Pick and Pay, and you mentioned Checkers with their extra savings, and obviously they launched it as well with ShopRite extra savings. I mean, let's not forget Pick and Pay have been in the marketplace plus or minus 10 years. And they've got a solid, they've got a value proposition which has been super enhanced by their smart prices. And Checkers ShopRite, I think of Checkers Extra Savings have come in at fourth with 60% of economically active South Africans using their program. So I think going from zero, because they're new, to 60% in 1 year is absolutely remarkable as well for Checkers. So I'm not surprised that Pick and Pay have taken this top spot, and I'm not surprised Checkers have done well. But, you know, over the years to come, I think that'll be a hotly contested top place.
And isn't that great? I mean, isn't it great, though? Because, I mean, it's just there is that contestation, and contestation from our perspective as consumers is phenomenal. The concept of getting rewards for a pharmacy when you fill up your car with fuel, that's the point that is befuddling.
Yeah, so there is a question in our survey, in the Brand Map survey, that asks about multi-partners, because the loyalty program landscape now is full of multi-partners. So like tying up with, as you said, Clicks with Engen or eBucks with Engen, and every fuel station is tied up with different partners. And the question that was asked is, what do you feel about multi-partner programs? And interestingly, 34% of the respondents said, I actually don't know what that is. It confuses the audience, so to speak. But those who do understand it, 25% said, I really enjoy them because I can earn points faster. So if you have a Clicks card and a eBucks relationship and you go to Engen, actually all three of those can work together in your favor and you earn currencies much faster. So the smart users of loyalty programs can really benefit from it. And those partnerships are there for that purpose.
If you're not a smart user, then you're what, Amanda? Thank you. I don't take insults very well because I don't get it. Now, listen, final word. And most people, this is the most interesting thing out of this research, really, is the vast majority of people with loyalty programs like the plastic cards. I use something called Stow Card or Store Card or something. It's an app with my cards loaded onto it. So the few that I do have and do remember to use sometimes are on my smartphone, which helps. But most people they'll carry like a Hessian sack full of plastic cards around with them.
Yeah, it is a shock, actually, Bruce. I share your sentiment there. So, 76% prefer swiping a card, which is even further up from 2019 and then 2018. It's gone up year on year, where we expected it to reverse that trend and be more consumers wanting to engage with app technology like you've just described, and especially off the back of a pandemic 18 months when we should be doing touchless everything. I really expected that to be a different result, but no, it's firmly at 76%. But if you actually dig under the surface of that and look at some brands are more likely to be able, their consumers are more likely to say, no, okay, I do prefer an app. So the brands involved, you know, the professionals running loyalty programs need to just scratch beneath the surface without taking that as a blanket response, because there are some brands where app technology works better for their consumers.
Amanda Cromart, always interesting. Thank you. The chief executive at Truth, she does with Brand Map, a loyalty white paper every year, has done so for 6 years. Fascinating findings in that loyalty white paper, with the Pick and Pay smart shopper program coming out tops, the huge gains that you see in ShopRite's program with Checkers is absolutely enormous, and the bank's loyalty programs do remain very, very favorable. At least consumers believe so. I wonder if you would agree.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Nick Konzel from Sanlam Private Wealth, please explain to me why we are all this much poorer than we were a month or two ago. Nick Konzel, share prices have plummeted, the currency is weaker, and it just feels meh on a Friday.
Yes, evening, Bruce. Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's been one of those weeks. Like, do not look at your share portfolio today, whatever you do for the week that's just passed, because it has been a tough one. As you said, commodities have taken an absolute battering this week. A lot of share prices also. We've still got the noise coming out of China at the moment as well. And just to top it off, as you said, the Rand got smacked as well. So, yes, was not a pretty week to be in the office on the JSE.
And I just saw a figure today, the Financial Times publishing the fact that iron ore is down 20% this week, the worst week since 2008. I mean, it's as if, you know, there was nothing could ever go wrong, and pushing prices up and up and up and up. And now suddenly the scenario is nothing will ever go right.
Unfortunately, yeah, look, it's always when it's a little bit doom and gloom, you probably want to step in, but that iron ore price has been quite staring in the sell-off. I mean, that was $220-odd per ton not so long ago. I'm talking a few months ago. And then early hours of this morning in China traded under $100, $99.80, I think it got to. Also, huge, huge smack. And also the other commodities as well, Bruce. I mean, things like rhodium was close on $30,000. It's now under 10. So quietly, these markets have been taking a real hammering. And I wonder if these diversified miners like Kumba, which paid out such monstrous special dividends just a month ago, might be regretting maybe keeping a little bit of spare cash on their balance sheet.
Yeah, well, it's done now. They can't take it back. A good result yesterday from the First Rand Group, and the chief executive, Adam Pullinger, being really upbeat, actually, about South Africa. Despite the market gloom and doom, they're beginning, and he used the term green shoots, and I forgave him because it's a long time since 2008, and we could do with some green shoots. But the fact that they are seeing greater loan activity, they're seeing greater economic activity, even though people feel miserable and hard done by in the South African economy, they are seeing opportunities, which I found very encouraging.
Yeah, I also do. Also, I read the sort of transcript and listened to him speak a couple of times since the earnings. And I thought, as a snapshot, everyone's talking about, these earnings for these banks coming off a very low base. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that it came off of a low base or not, I thought those earnings were exceptional. I mean, 56% increase in EPS. The one for me as well, Bruce, was return on equity, that nice barometer we like to look at with the banks. I mean, 18%. I think the market was looking for 16. So it was a beat on every line. And as you said, a very positive outlook. And you just hope that if we manage to get this country a little bit in order and get a bit more growth north of 4%, 5%, 6% eventually, maybe in our lifetime, these banks are going to reap the benefits. But I did take away, it was a bit of good news. In other words, it's been a pretty tough week.
Yeah, it's not surprising. I just looked at Spurs trading update, and although they've had a much better sort of second half of the financial year versus the second half of last year, you'd struggle not to, frankly. The huge pressure and the huge restrictions and all of the sort of constraints that are put on that restaurant sector coming through loud and clear.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to hide. I mean, they are literally ground zero for what's happening with the pandemic and a tough time they've had. I mean, they've literally, from one week to the next, they don't know whether they're going to be locked down 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. Do they get rid of the stuff in their fridges or not? So those restaurants had a really tough time. And look, with the president moving us to level 2 last weekend, maybe there's a little bit of light in the tunnel for these restaurants, but they've had a long hill to climb.
No, I certainly do. Nick Kunze, thank you. He is with Sanlam Private Wealth after a horrible week. It's been a tough week. Oh, by the way, Nick, before you go. AVI, 13% up on the day. Are you hearing any real gossip? We talked about it yesterday.
What did you hear? I heard a little sniff around the virtual water coolers today.
And what was your sniff?
I'll tell you what I've heard.
You tell me yours first.
The sniff was PepsiCo.
Now, PepsiCo has already come in and bought Pioneer Foods, and so is the speculation that PepsiCo could be looking at AVI as well. I cannot imagine our competition authorities liking that one little bit.
Sort of talk about a bit of overlap. No, so but look, I think it's quite encouraging. Look, SA Inc's clearly in play ever since Heineken made the bid for Distell. That whole sector's in play. Yeah, so interesting. Yeah, nice big solid move there.
I hadn't heard that one, and that wouldn't make much sense to me. I'd heard that we're maybe selling INJ, or INJ is buying something else, or whatever. It's all wild speculation, and the market's prepared to trade on the speculation, and we'll maybe sell on the fact. We'll see. Nick Kunze, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth.
The Money Show is brought to you by APSA Access, an award-winning, secure, single sign-on platform that lets you manage your finances with speed and intelligence. That's Africanacity. Apps is a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Friday File in a moment, but first let me just alert you to the fact that breaking news in the Brutal Biz quiz this evening, tongue-in-cheek breaking news, and it's an insight as to why Jacob Zuma may be keeping Dalian Porfu on as his lawyer, and it's insight from an interview that we did with Dalian Porfu about 4 years ago, and in it he said something which suddenly struck me today as being potentially pertinent. deadly serious tongue-in-cheek stuff. Now, the promise of summer. We can feel it. You can get a sense of it. The trees are budding. The blossoms are out. The birds are tweeting earlier in the morning. They're tweeting even earlier than Carl Niehaus. What's better than entertaining outside, and especially in COVID times, is because you might be apprehensive about going indoors in the summer. You might be apprehensive if you get invited to someone's house and they say, oh, come inside, have a seat in the at the table in the kitchen, whatever the case is. You're going to go, oh, I don't know if I'm infected. I don't know if I've picked up an infection anywhere. I don't know if you have. Perhaps we could just be outside a bit. Maybe just outside. And so I think the summer of 2021-22 is going to be very much an outside experience. And to help you with that is something called Field Bar. Lee Hartman is a director at Field Bar. And it's lovely to have you on, Lee. Please describe the Field Bar to me, because I don't think I'll do it justice.
Hi, Bruce. Field Bar is a handcrafted cooler box. We think that cooler boxes were an overlooked category that hadn't changed much for the last 50 years or so. In fact, I think they've got worse. You know, they actually peaked in the 1970s. So we look to reinvent it with modern materials and to make them, you know, something more sophisticated and more urban.
Okay, so they're utilitarian things. You stuff them full of stuff, you carry them, they don't, you know, they're awkward to carry, they're uncomfortable to carry. Generally, they're very big and lumpy. And what you've done is brought design to the cool box. And you've kept it small, you've kept it very, very mobile and easy to carry. Just describe the look and feel.
Yeah, so the you know, we spent a lot of time interviewing people and looking inside cooler boxes. And we found that, you know, people are drinking less, but they're drinking, you know, better quality. So they weren't happy dragging around big cooler boxes. So size was important and proportion was important. And as you said, the comfort in your hand. So we looked at that and we put a lot of thought into how people pack it, how much ice you need to keep things cool. You know, with a filled bar, you don't need a whole bag of ice, just a tray of ice will be fine. So we put a lot of thought into that, and we've come up with something like quite interesting in terms of shape and style.
Now, the first time I saw this, I looked at it and went, oh, it looks like a mini Smeg fridge. You know, those retro Smeg fridges. It feels like there isn't a 1950s inspiration to it.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we wanted to go back to that generation where they made things properly, where, you know, people like cherished the products that they owned, and that's, they could be repaired. We did go back to the 50s, and the Smeg reference is there on purpose. It's a little bit, you know, that's fridges, they make things cold, so do cooler boxes.
Talk to me about the design, please, because, I mean, on your website, you've got this entire sort of schematic talking about the design. And, I mean, from the outside, a bit like an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy phone, it's very nice to look at, but you don't know what's going on inside. Inside this thing is quite an extraordinary amount of engineering and design and the use of materials and stuff. Do you or your partners, anybody have the scientific backing to build these things?
Yeah, I mean, we used a couple of engineers. We had an industrial designer and then a plastic engineer. You know, cool boxes are simple products, but they need to be made properly. You know, you need to keep the air out in order to get the ice performance. And we wanted to make something that looks good, but is also durable, because they need to be used outside, you know, so they can't be too delicate. So that was a real challenge for us. But it took 2 years to make, and we're using the same principles to make a bigger cooler box, which is coming out early next year. But yeah, I mean, the materials on the market at the moment are just amazing. You know, they're light and they're durable and they're tough.
I mean, it's anything sort of from space travel, because so much of design nowadays is utilizes technologies that come from elsewhere. What is the basis of the materials that you're using?
Yeah, so we're using an ABS plastic, which is shock absorbent. It's UV protected. It's light. It's strong. We use silicone in our gaskets in order to keep things airtight. And then we use aluminium. So we use aluminium. We call it hardware, which is the hinges and the latches that close the cooler box. because aluminium is incredibly durable. The hinges aren't going to break on a field bar.
No, it's amazing. 58 individual parts in a field bar, which is big enough, I think, to carry either two bottles of bubbles and some ice, or to carry three bottles of wine. You'd have to drink out the bottle, though, because there's no space for glasses, as far as I can see.
No, there's no spaces for glasses. We've seen people put their like plastic glasses upside down over the neck of the wine bottles, and then it fits
in
nicely.
That's problem solving.
But then we also are looking to bring out a complimentary bag that the field bar can fit in. It's got a few extra pockets to carry some extra stuff. Yeah. So there's a whole range of accessories that are going to go together with your field bar.
And was this addressing some sort of personal frustration other than cold boxes are ugly, impractical, and haven't really been redesigned for 50 years?
Yeah. I just really like the handcrafted premium product space. I think it's a great area for South Africa to compete on. I don't think we're ever going to make the cheapest products in the world, but I think we can make, crafted design products, and we could sell them around the world. So that was from a business strategy point of view, that was very interesting to me.
Now, you and Corbin Warrington, do you both have day jobs? Is this a bit of a side hustle, or have you gone in both feet?
No, we're kind of half and half at the moment, but the business is growing really, really fast.
Lovely.
So, yeah, we have to revise that at some time.
I was talking to Chris Liat the other day of Liat Industries, and he sits in Cape Town with a design team of people creating safety gear for motocross, and primarily for motocross and for BMX racing. And 98% of his product is sold in the United States, or at least out of South Africa, most of it in the United States. And they do the design in Cape Town with great design teams. They then send the designs off to China, get manufactured there, and distribution happens from China. Do you have a similar model?
No, we decided not to manufacture in China. We wanted to manufacture in South Africa. We wanted to, contribute to employment here. And we also think that South Africa and Cape Town in particular has got a story to tell. We have great designers, and we can build good quality products. We make good yachts. We make very good wine. There is pockets of excellence when it comes to manufacturing, and we want to be part of that.
Fabulous tale. Thank you, Lee Hartman, directed Field Bar. You'll find the details at fieldbar.co.za. Tonight's Friday File, and it's this lovely retro feel and lovely looking product, and a nice tale to tell there as well, and made, designed, built, and exported from home to the world. Coming up in a moment, we're going to play the Brutal Biz quiz, as we always do on a Friday. Plus, of course, that exclusive insight as to why Jacob Zuma keeps Dalion Porfu on as his lawyer. But your first question this evening, I gave it away. But anyway, that's fine. We'll have other questions too. Who's run up yet another legal bill that they will need to crowdfund to pay? That is the first question in tonight's Brutal Biz quiz on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Who has run up yet another legal bill that they will need to crowdfund to pay? Who is that person on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702?
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Time for the Brutal Biz quiz this evening. Lines are open on 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. I'd love you to play this evening if you could answer a couple of questions for us and give you the title of Brutal Biz Quiz, Wiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Who has run up yet another legal bill today and that they're going to need to go to get crowdfunding to pay for it? That is the first question. My producers think I've mangled their question. I thought their question was too easy. So I then made it a bit harder and a bit more interesting, I thought. But you don't seem to think so. Let me tell you a little bit of background to this, because the Constitutional Court has dismissed his rescission application today and has handed him, remember a couple of weeks ago, it handed this person a 15-month jail sentence. Well, today, Justice Sisi Khampepe, who's been remarkable in this process, saying that this particular applicant's argument that he did not participate in the process which led to his jailing, which started on the 8th of July, did not hold water. and he was sentenced to 15 months. And then he went back to court, even though he's managed to duck and dive and dodge the panel that was designed to advise correctional services about whether or not he should be given early medical parole. Well, this particular individual's lawyer, Dalia Mpofu, was a guest on this show, on Other People's Money, in 2017. And Dalia Mpofu, it was really interesting, and he was very charming and very eloquent. And I was listening back to that interview today, and suddenly it became clear why this person keeps Dalia Mpofu on as their lawyer. Have a listen to this from exactly 4 years ago, 18th of September, 2017.
Got a very good guy who does my, who's like an all-rounder, does my tax, my investments, and is often cross with me because of, either I didn't do this or do that. But he has looked after me since something for
more than
50
years. Do you often
years.
Forget to follow up on invoices?
Oh, don't. If he's listening, that's what he kills me most about. I'm just the worst charger. I can work, even now, today people were literally begging me to say, please bill us. That's the part I always forget. And it's actually not a good habit.
You really should get some help on that front.
That's what I advised him. Charlotte and Soshanguve, who has run up a huge legal bill that they will need to crowdfund to pay?
I think it's Jacob Zuma.
Absolutely right, Charlotte and Soshanguve. Absolutely, it is Jacob Zuma. Thank you. Don't give Charlotte a heart attack, George. Charlotte knows that she's right, and I've told her she's right, and you're going all booze and stuff. And then Dalia Mpofu, of course, 4 years ago, was telling us he's terrible about doing his accounts. Maybe that's why Jacob Zuma keeps him on, because he never gets a bill. But when he does get those bills, things are going to mount up, Charlotte. They really are. Who makes the cigarettes? Peter Stuyvesant and Dunhill. Who makes the cigarettes, Peter? I'm not offering you cigarettes. I'm just saying, who makes the cigarettes, Peter Stuyvesant and Dunhill?
I'm not sure. Is it not
Dunhill? Is it? No, I don't think you've got it, Charlotte and Soshanguve, but thank you for playing. So, Charlotte and Soshanguve, who makes the cigarette brands Peter Stuyvesant and Dunhill? I'd like to know the name of the company, please. Let's this evening. I think only Soshanguve's lines are working this evening. Hello,
yes,
Let's Eye.
British American Tobacco.
British American Tobacco, absolutely. The BBC reporting on documents this week which show that British American Tobacco involved in negotiations to pay bribes to Robert Mugabe and other accusations. Now, what is Elon Musk's space company called?
you got me there. Elon Musk?
Elon Musk has got a space company. What is it called?
No, I don't know.
Let's say, where are you? You're living under a rock. Look up. Look up to the heavens. Thabo and Tembisa.
I didn't hear the question.
What is Elon Musk's space company called? We need to talk about Elon Musk more, producers. We need to talk about Elon Musk more. We do. Thank you, Thabo and Tembisa. Victor and Sunning Hill, put us out of our misery.
SpaceX.
SpaceX is absolutely right. Absolutely right. And for the first time ever, 4 civilians have gone into space on a space mission. A billionaire and 3 less wealthy private citizens blasted off from Florida on Wednesday aboard a SpaceX rocket, and they went into orbit. And they're the first all-civilian crew ever to circle the Earth from space without any professional astronauts on board. Which banking group has joined Nedbank in refusing to fund new coal projects, Victor?
I'm going to guess with the recent results release. First round,
absolutely right, Victor. Good deduction. Chief Executive Alan Pullinger said there's a huge amount of pressure, of course, and they're simply responding to that. African Rainbow Capital, which is controlled ultimately by Patrice Motsepe, has got a big shareholding in which bank?
The Time Bank.
Very good, Victor in Sunning Hill. Very good indeed. Very good indeed. Absolutely. The bank says it expects to break even in 2022. Which mining company has got Stillwater in its name?
Sibanye.
Victor, you are indefeatable. People are phoning to congratulate you already. Mama's phoning to say, Victor, my clever child, my whiz of the biz quiz. The fans are queuing, Victor. Well done to you, Victor, in Sunning Hill on giving us a good go this evening on The Money Show and is the whiz of the brutal biz quiz this Friday night. Congratulations, Victor. There was another question, but we don't have time. Which US rapper, also known as Barbie, I didn't know that, has been spreading misinformation about vaccines on Twitter? Nicki Minaj, and she gets into these fights with people and seems to really get off on it. But anyway, that is a question we didn't bother asking. But well done to Victor in Sunning Hill.